What's up, guys? On this episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear, we're going to get to talk to Skip here about how he got into writing. He's a writer for Elite FTS. Plus, we've got a bunch of questions from the Advices Radio Facebook page. We've got one about SEO. We're going to go deep into that. We've got a guy who's dealing with hemoglobin and hematocrit levels that are off. Everyday micro injections versus one shot per week, and a bunch more. We're going to cover that all right now on Blood, Sweat, and Gear. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the next episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear. This program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. What else should I tell you? Oh, subscribe. If you guys haven't hit the subscribe button yet, you enjoy what we're doing, hit the subscribe button, hit the notification bell so you can stay up to date with everything we are doing. If you're watching this on video, we also have audio podcast at AdvicesRadio.com or search Advices Radio on your favorite podcast app. I'm here with Skip Hill and S2H. We're going to blast the new intro for this episode. Did you guys see that intro I put together with like the freeze frames and stuff? Well, that happened. People who are watching this, they already saw that on the recorded version. This happened already, man. I'm really happy with that.
It was cool. It was pretty cool. Did you see it there, S-T-H?
No.
No? You didn't pay attention to
that. I don't have a clue what you're talking about.
No.
It was cool.
I only texted it to both of you guys and, you know, all that. But. Hey, I went back in the archives. So if you guys haven't watched previous shows with Skip and with S2H, these guys have been podcasting long before I had been. They had a program called PED Radio that ran for a couple few years with a great guy, Taylor, who was the host, who did basically what I do here. And you guys did an episode in 2014 with the Mountain Dog, John Meadows. I just went back and I listened to that episode today. And I listened to part the other day and I listened to part today. That was fun, man. Do you guys even remember that? That was so long ago now.
What was it? 14?
Yeah, 2014.
Jesus.
It's been a little while. I was just busy. I apologize for going off on a tangent, but I was busy watching Scott's video frame frozen there for 30 seconds. I thought we were in trouble.
Mine or his?
Mine?
His.
Oh, mine?
It's good now. That's good.
It didn't freeze to me.
Yeah, it was just
Wi-Fi.
It was not us. We are we're rolling. We're good. But
so what was it with Mountain Dog?
Well, I'm interviewing him tomorrow. And so I've been digging back and just, you know, listening to some old stuff, looking at some of his old footage and everything. And I figured, no, Fuad just did a show with him this previous week. You know, John and I set this up like 2-3 weeks ago. I've been lining people up well in advance. And then right before I interview him, Fuad jumps in and does an interview with him. So that just came out. I didn't listen to that one because like I didn't want to copy it. You know what I mean? I didn't want to like think about the stuff they were talking about and then just go down those same roads. But I wanted to think about like the stuff that we haven't thought about with John in a while. And it was interesting because this is back when he was competing. He mentioned bumping into you, Skip, at Masters Nationals. So this, I don't know what you were doing at Masters Nationals, man, but that was a while ago now.
Wait, who bumped into me at Masters Nationals?
John Meadows.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you.
2014.
Thank you. You were there?
I didn't even realize we did a show that long ago. I mean, I'm doing math. I'm like 6 years ago.
You would think if we had been doing a podcast that long, I wouldn't do things like this while we're talking because I'm sick right now, but I just did it.
Oh,
so
God.
To do a podcast that long and not even know that you're doing those things, how good are we really when you think about it? I'm speaking for myself, I guess.
Well, our listeners have tripled to 9 since then. So
the other thing is I don't know when I was at Masters Nationals. I don't think it was Masters Nationals. I think it was NA's.
North Americans?
Yeah, I think it was North Americans because I have not ever been to Masters. I've never been to Pittsburgh. Did they hold it in a different place?
North Americans is at Pittsburgh.
No, it wasn't. It was in Cleveland.
Do they move it? They moved it back then?
Well, all I know is when I was at NAS, I was in Cleveland. Okay. Because I remember when I pulled up to the hotel, I remember thinking to myself, this is a fucking shithole. I'm serious, because there was like this roundabout thing in front of it, and yeah. it had like this fountain, and it looked like trash was swirling around in the air. It was very, it was not very inviting. I felt like I was in the middle of Philly or something. It just was. And Philly, Cleveland, same shithole. I mean, sorry for your listeners who live in Philly or Cleveland. It's still a shithole. There are nice places of Cleveland in Cleveland. There are nice places in Philly, but it's still known as a shithole by everybody outside of Philly and Cleveland.
Guys, just being Philly, honest, Cleveland listeners right now, don't. Yeah, I'm from Detroit, so I'm in the same boat with you right now.
Exactly. So. Well, people are going, well, you're in Miami. What the fuck's the difference? Miami's some shit. It's badass. That's different. That's all I'm saying.
Skip, you really know how to draw them in there, don't you, buddy?
Yeah, I do. I do. But it was NAs in Cleveland. I've never been to Masters National. Never been to Pittsburgh.
Okay. Well, regardless, it was you were talking about having just seen him like just a previous couple months before that or something. Mm-hmm. And it was back when he was still competing. So his, you know, it's no matter, like, your mindset's always different as a competitor. You can hear it in somebody. You know what I mean? Like when you're focused on competing, your mindset is just different. You can hear it in somebody's voice. I could definitely hear it in his. You know, the last time I interviewed John, he told me he was like, well, nowadays I eat some pancakes in the morning for meal one and two eggs. He's like, I used to eat a lot more eggs.
Let me just tell you, though, people think that he eats a lot. That pancake, it's like a dollar pancake.
Yeah,
it's
no, what I'm saying is he's like eating two eggs. That was my point. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he
doesn't eat any, not much of anything. Like, he has one. He talks about going to have donuts. He has like one donut and he's full. That's not eating donuts. You got to come down here to the Salty Donut in Miami. We're going to go get $50 dozen of donuts, and you're going to eat maybe two. I'm going to eat maybe two of them, maybe three, and make myself sick because they're too big.
Well, how big are these donuts?
I have like one. They're artesian donuts, man. They're pretty fucking big, but they're good.
That word artesian. What does that word even mean?
I don't even know. It just sounds fancy. It's probably synonymous with fancy.
I've seen they started using that word with like water. Oh, it's artesian water. Oh, yeah. That's why it's $4 a bottle.
Exactly. Well, think a dozen donuts for $50.
Whew.
I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
Lines out the door.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. They close when all the donuts are gone.
Basically, we're in the wrong business.
Apparently.
Yeah. So what's up, guys? I wanted to talk to you today, Skip, about a topic, and it's something we've never talked about really here on the show. That is your writing. You do some writing.
Someone's calling me.
Yeah, you do some writing.
It looks important. Hold on a second, guys.
You gonna take this?
I'm just playing. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, guys, we don't really ever talk about it, but Skip's been a writer for Elite FTS for a long time. I'm sure most of you guys know who Elite is, but if you don't know what it is, it's their majority powerlifters. They're big, strong motherfuckers like Dave Tate, who they get in there. They lift a lot heavier shit than most bodybuilders do.
All bodybuilders.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And they're some badass dudes. So how did you get in that crowd as a bodybuilder? I never asked you any of this.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been with them for 8 years, and I just want to point out, because I'm quite proud of this, the I don't know if you want to call it ranking, maybe that's not very fair, but I was the number two columnist for Elite FTS for 2019.
No kidding. Congratulations, man.
Yeah, and the person in front of me, man, I don't even know who she is. That's not even fair. That's not cool, man.
Really?
but she beat me nonetheless. So I was first loser. Basically, she was the winner and I was the first loser. So, I'm still flattered. So I've enjoyed writing for them for 8 years. So how I got started was Steve Colescott. Name ring a bell or no? No shit. Okay. Well, anyway, he was with Elite FTS, super cool dude. He didn't stay with them very long, but he was with them, when I was writing, because I wrote for the, you know, the muscle magazines for Muscle Mag.
Oh, you did?
And, yeah, I did for for print and online for Muscle Mag Print, online for Flex Magazine, and also for Muscle and Fitness Print Mag.
No kidding. And I didn't know any of this.
He actually helped me to get a couple of those gigs, primarily the one with Muscle Mag. And when he was with Elite, he asked me, he did a, I think it man, it's been a long time. I think it was an interview first. And then he asked me if I wanted to write. And at that time, they were trying to bring in some bodybuilders to, like, I think, you know, Justin was kind of in there, but, you know, he's so fucking strong. So he's a bodybuilder, but he's like a really retardedly strong bodybuilder.
They could still relate to him. You know what I mean? They're like, yeah, hey, he's a bodybuilder. He looks good, but he's also respectable in the gym. Yeah.
And, you know, there were a couple other people. I want to say Shelby was in there briefly too.
Okay.
And Mark Dugdale is still with them. He's been in there for, but it's not a big bodybuilder. And then there's like me. Okay. And I think honestly, and you know, I'm not, it'll sound like humility, but it's more like just transparency than it is anything else. I think that it didn't have anything to do with my physique or bodybuilding or anything else as much as, I mean, it had to do with bodybuilding, obviously, because they were branching out into bodybuilding, but it was more my peculiar writing style.
Okay.
And I remember I wrote an intro article for Elite, just introducing who I was and that I was going to piss some people off, basically, and be ready for it. And the very next article was powerlifters versus bodybuilders. And satire. People don't understand satire, but it was funny. Okay. So I blasted bodybuilders being, you know, kind of a dick, and I blasted powerlifters. Well, here comes Mr. Bodybuilder guy. Who's this guy? And, you know, powerlifters have no sense of humor. They're worse than bodybuilders, right? And as soon as I get on them about being fat and hairy and not knowing how to diet, you know, just being funny.
Yeah.
They came on and fucking lit into me for the comments. And Dave Tate absolutely freaking loved it.
Okay. At first, before you found out that Dave loved it, were you afraid, like, oh shit, this is it? I wrote one article basically and I'm done. Like, I'm fired.
No, I really didn't. But there were so many people saying I should be fired that I started to think, fuck, man, I have like, I mean, I thought they would, some people would be irritated,
yeah,
but they were fucking pissed. Yeah. Like, they were really mad, filling up the comments. They were nasty comments.
Really?
Yeah. Like, almost like troll comments, right? They were mad. And I thought, I didn't think I would not, that I would get, you know, fired or that they wouldn't want me writing. I figured, you know, Dave wouldn't have brought me on if he didn't know what my writing style was. And he absolutely just loved it. So that did nothing but basically fuel me, you know, even more. Yeah. So every now and then I'll take a shot at him in an article, you know, those guys, because they leave me alone now. They basically are done because it's been 8 years and I haven't been fired yet, so clearly they know I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah,
so they just don't read my articles anymore.
Okay.
At least the ones who don't like me, they don't want to read my shit anymore. But hey, I'm number two. If they were reading my articles, maybe I'd have been number one. They kept me out of the number one spot, so, you know, maybe they got me. Maybe in time they got me. I don't know.
How often do you turn an article in for them?
Every 2 weeks. Okay. So for 8 years, I think I figured it out last year that I'd written 100 and this off the top of my head, like 150 articles for them or something in that time. So, you know, you got to figure, I mean, there's another 20, add another 25 or 26 onto that. I don't know. But if you want a good laugh, go all the way back to the first page, because there's shit ton of pages of my articles.
Yeah.
And it's you can read it. There's more in there that'll piss you. There's I'm Not Sad for Mike Matarazzo.
Okay.
That one pissed off a lot of people.
Really? When he passed away or what?
Yeah, because people can't, what happens is people emote when they read, and they read into it based on the title or the headline. You have to understand that part of good writing is a headline that draws you in. Fox News is horrible with it because they're incredibly misleading.
It's like super clickbait. People get pissed nowadays, yeah. Like with YouTube videos. Yeah,
because you read the article and it's not even anything to do with with the time.
Yeah.
So I drew in with that. I'm not sad for Mike Matarazzo.
Yeah.
And I explained the gist of the article. My position was basically this. Mike died doing and pursuing what he loved doing.
Okay.
So for that reason, I'm not sad for him. Well, I mean, people, you have to understand, I wrote that article like 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And every few months, a handful of times a year, someone will still find that article, post on it, something horribly shitty.
Really?
About how, oh, yeah. I mean, people are brutal, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, how not just, oh, you're an asshole, you're a piece of shit, you shouldn't have a writing job. I mean, they'll comment shitty about your family.
Yeah.
About how I should die. I mean, you know, well, you know, something happened to you. Maybe you should die and we'll see how your family feels. I mean, really?
Wow.
That's just horrible shit. Like, why? How could you be such a shitty person? Like, go back. I've said, I don't know how many times in response, go back and read without your emotional bias and read what I actually wrote. And there's just too many people who they just can't do that. They inject their own emotion. They inject.
Yeah.
It's almost taking things out of context
because yeah.
people just, you might be a troll and you might, but you're not, people aren't that stupid. They just take things to fit their kind of to fit their narrative or to fit their emotion.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of those in there that have pissed off. I would say in the last few years, I'm nowhere near as, I would call them rants. Like I would go off on a rant. It was something that I took from,
Duchesne, right?
No, from,
cause I saw Duchesne did a lot of rants. I just was looking at a bunch of his old articles. I found a whole stack of, Muscle Media 2000, like from 80, from 95. And every article he wrote was like, I'm time for another rant. So I thought that's what you meant, but you're thinking of someone else.
I'm from, taking it from the SNL guy, the guy who, what the hell's his name? Miller.
Steve Miller Band.
No.
Steve Miller Band. You've heard of them, right, Scott?
Kevin Miller. What the hell's his name? Kevin. Anyway, he had the show on HBO and yeah. His monologue would be, you know, I don't want to go off on a rant, but, and then the lighting would go down behind him. It's just horrible that I can't even think of who the hell it is. I just came back from vacation yesterday. I am incredibly tired and borderline sick. So my fucking brain is not working very well. But nonetheless, who was the guy in Joe Dirt? He was the radio
dude,
guy.
You're asking the wrong guy. I don't, everybody.
You haven't seen Joe Dirt?
Somebody who's watching this live, please tell us, because Skip isn't going to tell his story until he figures this out.
I'm not going to stop. The radio guy, what the hell is his name? He did football.
I don't ever know. Like, I'm not a celebrity person.
He was on Fox News. He's the comedian.
You could have a movie.
Dennis Miller.
Thank you. Dennis Miller. Dennis Miller did the,
thank you.
I don't want to go off on a rant monologue when he used to be on HBO. I mean, he's on HBO 20 years ago, but nonetheless, that's really kind of where I picked that up. But a lot of my articles were more ranty. They were more entertaining than they were training or nutrition information. I had to actually start to switch over to actually providing some information instead of just entertainment. So I kind of try to write at least every other article that is training and nutrition related now. It doesn't always work that way.
Yeah.
But that's the pattern I'm after.
So people out there in bodybuilding, like everybody wants to figure out a way how to make money as a bodybuilder, you know, in the industry. How do you become a writer, Skip? Is this something anybody could do? Like what would be the top suggestion, you know, for real suggestion you give people if they wanted to become a writer?
Well, everybody is a writer because everybody writes and blogs and that sort of, that's why, you know, I get paid a six-figure salary by Elite FTS for writing. Anybody with a lead is going, what the fuck? The other ones are just laughing because they know better. Dave and Tracy are like, those are not the checks we cut to Skip. But, the point is before the internet, if you wrote a column in a muscle magazine, you know, once a month, you'd get paid, you know, $2,000.
Yeah.
You could write four articles for, you know, muscle magazines and, you know, make $6,000-$8,000 a month. That's pretty, pretty good income for writing.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, it's not a lot of work to someone who could write well and is experienced.
Yeah.
These days, though, everybody wants to write. Everybody will write basically for free.
I bet.
It's very easy to find people. So it's not that it's terribly lucrative to write for the magazines or for online. What you're really writing for is exposure, you know, PR, you know, marketing, getting your brand out there and getting your name out there with a reputable company. Obviously, you know, Elite FTS is, you know, far more reputable. And I'm not taking a shot at Muscle Mag or anything else, but
yeah.
You know, the muscle magazines are just the muscle magazines. But when I did that online, print magazines are 16 to 24. The age demographic is basically 16 to 24. That didn't help my business team skip pretty much at all. But when I went online, then that demographic changes, even though it's still Muscle Mag. And the same thing happened with Flex Magazine and Muscle and Fitness.
Really?
But but Elite FTS is different. The demographic is much older and they have more money.
Yeah.
So as an example, I always ask when clients come on board with me where they heard about me. And the two main ones these days are Elite FTS or the Blood, Sweat, and Gear podcast.
Right on.
But statistically, as far as, and this is huge for anybody, if you're training people, you have a business, you need to follow your numbers. You have to know where your clients come from, who's paying you, that sort of shit. And 70%, roughly 70% of my clientele that is older than 35, I'd almost say 40, but I have to say 35, 70% come to me from Elite FTS.
Really?
So if they paid me nothing, and they don't, they pay me. If they paid me nothing, and I don't want Dave and Tracy to hear this and be like, fuck it, we're not paying them anymore. But I would do it for nothing because it's so big for my brand. It's so big for my client base. It's huge. So I'm going to continue to do it as long as they'll have me, quite frankly.
Scott, do you have anything to add to this? You look a little disgruntled over there.
No, I'm just skips almost up to his 25-minute mark of straight rambling, so I'm good.
I was asking questions.
I'll add some real content to this, some real educational content. If you aspire to be a writer and you want to make money off it in this industry, there's really, I would say, outside of a few people, there's really only one way to do it, and that is to be the writer for a supplement company where you write all their descriptions of their products and their marketing for it. So you have to have a pretty knowledgeable background of their products and chemistry. But there's a select few people out there, well, more than select few, there's some that hire on with companies and they do all their descriptive writing and then all their, you know, like when they, if they have a website or if they have a forum or whatever that writes all their product write-ups and then, and some of it's pretty scientific. So I've known a few guys that have done that have made pretty decent money doing it. And if you're really good, if you're good at it, if you can write and spell and you don't have to take 7 hours to edit something, and then you have the knowledge to put into that, you can make some okay money doing it.
I could see that. You guys know Matt Wyke? He does a lot of writing.
Yeah.
He's really pushed himself. You know, he was training people more. And I know he had like a location in his town, like a gym or something they had set up. And I think he even stopped doing that. And he just like pushed to full time writing. And he said, I don't know where he's at now. Last time I talked to him was maybe a year ago. And he had written an article or a piece of content of some type, one piece a day for the entire year. Like he was just so driven because he wanted to be so successful with it that he set that as a goal to have like one piece of content that would be published in some way every day for the whole year. I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot.
Well, you asked how to get into it, and honestly, I don't know how to get into it. I don't know any. I don't have any advice for someone getting into it because I got kind of lucky. I mean, I knew somebody, and I think that's what happens a lot of times. But you know, you can. I know with Elite FTS, you can. You don't have to be an Elite FTS writer or columnist on, you know, on their payroll or on the staff to be able to contribute, you know, an article and get it published. So, I mean, if you're a good writer and you have something to say and you can entertain people and get people to read what you're writing, then, you know, Elite FTS will publish you. You just have to be better than everything else they're reading that month, basically, you know, anything else that has been submitted. And I can't tell you how many people, you know, submit things and like if they sift through 200 things a month and pick out three, that I don't know. But you can always, people are willing to, you know, to publish if what you're writing is entertaining and is informative, if you're not willing to get paid.
Yeah.
And I tell people all the time, you have to, it's not about getting paid for what you're writing anymore. Typically it's about exposure and marketing and getting your name out there. It's almost kind of adding to your resume in a sense.
Yeah.
Then you got to be careful who you're writing for, because you don't want to be, you know, if you build a relationship with some, you know, shitty, you know what I mean? Shitty, half crappy, either website or publication, or you're writing it for a newsletter. You're writing a newsletter for an underground steroid supplier. I don't know if that's going to add to your resume
or take away.
Yeah, exactly.
I could see that. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, hey guys, let's take a really quick break. We'll be back in just a minute. We've got a bunch of questions. We're going to start this one up about SEOs. We'll be back in just a second.
Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
Hey, what's up, guys? We're back. Blood, Sweat, and Gear. Skip Hill, S2H. I'm Scott McNally. I want to remind you, if you're watching this on YouTube, we also have the audio podcast, which we've been doing for years. That's why they only see like a dozen shows that are up at the Think Big. But we're on like episode 70-something. And that's because the majority of our shows had been done on audio for the past several 4 or 5 years now. So you guys can go back to that archive at advicesradio.com or search Advices Radio on podcast app. If you're listening on audio, guess what? We also have YouTube. Subscribe, please hit the notification bell. I'm going to start us out. We've got a bunch of questions. We put out a thread over at our group. So I'm at the Advices Radio group, and I'm going to go first to Mike Andrews. He says, this is for Blood, Sweat, and Gear. Thoughts on SEOs for muscle growth. Do they really add permanent muscle if used enough? Is it true that most pros use SEO? Before you answer, guys.
No and yes.
Wait, hold on. Before you answer, I asked him a follow-up question because I didn't know where he was at. The dude looks pretty big. You know, he's got some solid muscle, and it looks mature, like he's been training for a long time. So I asked him, I said, Mike, are you competing? You look like you've got some, you know, years of training under your belt. And he said, no, I just want to look good for the wife. He's in his late 40s. He's been training for quite some time. So figured I'd add that in, you know, because I do feel that the use of SEO, if you're competing or not, like maybe I would have thought like I wouldn't suggested it. But then if somebody tells me, no, I have no plans of competing, then I definitely, there's no, for me, it would be a hard no. But I'll let you guys take this one. Scott, you sound like you had some thoughts.
What was the first question? Oh, do they
Will it grow muscle?
Well, SEO is kind of a general, that's kind of a broad term. All it does is stretch the fascia. So, I mean, they're all temporary, two different degrees, because there's been SEOs made with water. There's been SEOs made without it. There's been SEOs made, like the original Synthol had lidocaine in it. And, cause it was pretty painful. And, you know, that there would cause, most of the time we see sterile abscesses from SEOs, it's from the original Synthol. Due to its lidocaine base, alcohol. The newer ones, like we talked about this on another podcast, the ones that guy sells on Professional Muscle, they have those, there's three C's acids. There's carbolic, I don't remember which ones they are, but they all start with a C. And it's got a little bit of alcohol in it. And those, unlike ones with water, which the body absorbs them pretty quickly, so you get less stretch in them. And unlike the ones with lidocaine, where you can have more problems, Synthrol, yeah, that one, that's probably the best one out there. There's painless pumps is one other one. Not too familiar with that one. The Synthol, it's something, or it's SEOs. It's like saying I got a car, there's like a lot of different cars. So there's different versions of this. So, from what I've seen, the one, the Synthrol ones they sell on Pro Muscle. Those are probably the best ones out there, and they're probably the most used. And yes, a lot of pros use them. I couldn't say that everyone uses them, but they're pretty frequently used. I could guess. Let me say 75% in the higher levels of bodybuilding probably use them. Maybe a little bit less, but around there. But yeah, you got to be careful with them because, they're not the easiest to inject. You can have some issues with them. But like I said, the Synthrol one is probably the easiest to use. And the guy, they give you like exact instructions on how to use them. I mean, it's to the T, which is also good for users who are just trying to troll into the internet on forums, trying to figure out how to do it. I would say their guidelines, in my opinion, are pretty accurate.
Good point with a lot of SEOs. I think that Synthrol, do you agree that, you thought it was the best one, right?
I think all their products are probably the best.
Yeah, I do too. I know I've used Synthrol, Synthrol myself years ago, 04, but I use it in my shoulders. And I think not only is it probably the best one out there, but the best one out there when you factor in health and from a standpoint of, it's not very likely to abscess, and it doesn't have, it's not like the original. People need to understand the original Synthol was just some fucking horrible shit.
Really?
Oh God. I don't know how to explain this, but I look at it as almost like a gel. Injecting something that takes forever to break down, and it would last a long time, but it would also look like shit if you didn't do it right. Hmm. Because it was just nasty, thick shit.
Yeah.
And with Synthrol, even if you don't get it right, first, it dissipates very quickly. You almost have to be careful before a show that you don't stop it too soon prior to the show, because it'll start to dissipate. And on the one hand, that's good. It's good from a health standpoint, and it's not as likely to abscess or to be necrotic, basically.
Which is sterilized oil.
Yeah, but it's so much thinner. And so if you don't have to be as precise with the injecting as you did with the regular Synthol, because it doesn't stay there as long. So it's not as likely to get as lumpy or look like shit. But I know I stopped it at about a week out, and I could tell even in a week that it had dissipated, not, 50% or anything, but it was enough to be able to tell that it had dissipated even in a week. So I clearly think that's the best one. But here's another thing that I want to ask, because I want to ask S2H, about this. Do you consider Essiclean to be an SEO? That's kind of a tough one. I think it is because
I would say it's a very temporary one.
Right. But it's also coming back and the shit was good.
Is it really? It's making a comeback. What is it exactly for anybody who's watching? Because it's something I'm hardly familiar with. So for myself, but especially for everybody watching, what is
Essiclean? It's like pump Essiclean? And hose.
Yeah, it's basically, I can even put it into better or even easier layman's terms. Basically, you're going to inject it to make you sore and swollen in that area, and it does not feel good. And you're going to do it for what, one night prior to the show or two nights? I mean, it's not anything you do for any sustained length of time.
It's an inflammatory is what it would come down
really to. All it is, yeah.
So you put that into a muscle just before the show, and then it's going to specifically swell that area, mm-hmm. that muscle.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And it's nice and warm. Very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's difficult to get right, because if you don't get it right, then you're going to have swollen. It just sometimes, if you don't get it right, it can look really bad.
Hmm. I've heard stories of guys using that. I can't remember who it was, but I've heard a story of someone having 100 syringes laid out the night before the show in the hotel room, just going through, just front delt, lateral delt, boom. Just
there are some SEOs though, if I recall, that I believe that were promoted. They were putting some amino acids in there.
Huh.
That was gonna increase protein synthesis, but. I have a real hard time getting behind that as something that's really even makes a difference. But I do remember, I don't remember which brand it was. There was somebody that was pushing one that they said it had amino acids in it. It would increase protein synthesis. And that may be where the listener's question asked about gaining muscle or holding muscle or something. So, but yeah, you got to know what you're doing with them. I mean, you can screw them. You can screw it up pretty good. And like the old synthol, used to get the runs too. People would inject it and they would maybe in the delt, it would look really good and round out. Then all of a sudden, like a blob would run down the tricep.
Oh God, real.
Or down the rear head or something. And so you'd pose and then you're like, man, his delts are great. And it looks like there's like a fucking, like a glue bomb went out, or is rolling down your skin underneath it.
Now the guys in South America, they're not using what we're talking about, right? They're not using like just a sight enhancement oil.
They're using like fucking vegetable oil.
They're using some crazy shit from what
vegetable
I hear.
Vegetable oil is one of the main ones.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's nuts, man. I mean, how much would somebody have to put in a bicep to get those crazy arms? Because I see guys in these videos from South America and stuff where they don't even look like they're training, they don't have any kind of muscular base. They have really skinny necks, no pec development. And then boom, they've got, well, they may have pec development because they're injecting them, but then but nothing to it, just like crazy traps, crazy shoulders, crazy arms, crazy pecs. And it's all fake and it's blown up crazy.
Well, I mean, I think most people might think this is just an assumption, because I've never actually had that in front of me, but so you're going to have, you got a lot of infection, inflammation, enzymes going to the area to protect the area from infection. So you think you could just, if it looks like it's 10 ounces, it would be 10 ounces, but I would say it was quite a bit less because the body's moving water, enzymes and everything to the area, blood.
Mm.
But I bet you those guys have those big, like, they look like your overweight grandma's flappy arms, but they're a little tougher. I bet you they've pumped 8 or 10 cc's at least in there.
At a time, like that. At a time.
I don't know how they do it. I mean, it's obviously fucking stupid. So I don't know. Maybe we get one on the show. We should get one of those guys on.
An interview.
The guy that his arms are missing, they amputated him from it.
Because I'd hate to guess at how much they would hold too, but I would say, I mean, I'm with you, Scott. It would almost be at a time, because there's, I understand what Scott is saying about, you're going to have inflammation and stuff like that. But
yeah.
I would honestly, I think some of those ridiculous guys who, like you said, the skinny neck, skinny arm.
Yeah.
They've put probably 100 or 200 mil into those.
There's over a couple time.
Yeah. And how much it dissipates depends on, you know, what they're actually using. But there's, I wouldn't be surprised if there were a couple hundred mil in some of those because they're bad. They're just.
I'm sure one of those dudes has a YouTube video or somewhere where like progressed through his vegetable oil cycles, you know.
Yeah.
I am surprised they haven't died. I mean, let's be.
They have died. There's guys died from it.
Okay. But I mean, it's not like. I guess I would expect more of them to be croaking than the amount of people who are dying. Cause some of them, I see them and I just think you deserve to die. You're so fucking stupid. I just can't even believe this.
There's one dude, they had to amputate his arms.
See that? If I heard more that was happening more, that would make more sense. I just haven't heard that that's happening.
Well, that's probably a new trend now. They probably gave up on that one.
Now I've heard that people are concerned that there may be organ health issues with sight enhancement, that with SEO specifically, like the sight enhancement oil that bodybuilders are using. I've heard, you know, that you could potentially cause issues. I know, you know, Derek Anthony, he talked all about it publicly. I mean, it's no secret. I listened to his podcast, and even when he was on dialysis, he was like, I can't use gear anymore, you know. And he was like, but I'm still putting some stuff in my arms. He wanted to still, he couldn't stop, you know, he couldn't stop being, you know, he was known for being a big jacked dude. And rest in peace, Derek passed away. But I know that he was using SEO, you know, well past the time that he was told he shouldn't be using anything at all anymore, you know. But I've heard in other cases, though, kidney issues.
Liver. Too.
Liver,
but I think it depends on. I think the older synthols with the oils in them are much more dangerous to your liver and kidney functions than some of the other ones. I mean, because that's why I say, like, saying SEO is a pretty blanket statement.
Right,
a lot of them have nothing in common in ingredient wise in them or what's in them. So like synthol and Synthrol. There's the only common ingredient they would have is alcohol. That's the only common ingredient.
Okay.
So I think it's
completely different. And Synthrol was pretty thin, for the record. I mean, it was surprisingly thin to me when I injected. I was actually pretty surprised. So, you know, to kind of piggyback off of what Scott's saying, definitely a blanket statement when you're talking about SEOs, because one is day and one is night. And I'm going to go on record and say, and I have no vested interest. I am not getting kicked back anything from, Synthetech or synthetic, depending on who you talk to, how they say that. But,
strength.
Exactly. Synthrol, to me, I didn't see, and I kept, you know, very good track of, you know, bloods and things like that and kidney and liver and everything else while I was using it. I didn't see anything, nothing changed, but I'll be honest. I would not have ever even thought or considered using the original Synthol. Okay. I would not use it.
Okay. One last question and we'll move on from sight enhancement oils. Is there ever time that you've experienced it, Skip, you know, what to expect from even like moderate use, whatnot. Is there ever a time that you would suggest to somebody like, yeah, this would be a good time for you to use some SEO? Or would you say across the board that just at this point in life, no matter what somebody's position in is, you don't think it would benefit them?
Well, first, I would never tell anybody to use it.
Sure.
And that's just my own conscience. any more than I would tell someone who's natural to use steroids. That's a personal decision that if they made and someone came to me and said, hey, I want to use SEO, you know, what's your experience with it? Can you help me, you know, kind of guide me in the right direction?
Okay, let me rephrase it then. Time when you would say, okay, yeah, I could see where that makes sense, that this person could benefit from that.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you
okay, can take there are times.
Simple. Yeah, there are. I mean, you know, you can see someone with a great physique who, you know, just may have genetically poor, I'm just using the example, I'm picking an arbitrary muscle, but, you know, they have poor you know, poor biceps.
Yeah.
And maybe you've worked with them for a while and you know their history, and they have gone out of their way and busted their ass for years trying to get them to grow, and the rest of their physique is, you know, much higher caliber, but yet that one thing is holding them back, or it could be buys and tries. But the point being, something is lacking that you almost look at and you go, this is a, you know, a genetic obstacle here. You're like, you're not able to grow, and this is the only thing holding you back. Then I would say, sure. And you know, you said something earlier that I want to comment on. You said if you're not competing, that you would discourage the use.
I was going to just come back to that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm apathetic in situations like that. I think it's still a personal decision, because I think a lot of people would say, well, then why use steroids if you're not competing? Because it's still a personal decision based on how you want to look. You know, you use that guy as an example that asked the question. He's late into his 40s and he may have a great physique, but he doesn't want to compete. He's more about, you know, either his wife or, you know, his girlfriends or, whatever. I mean, I think you said he was married, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So his wife. So, you know, that's still a personal decision. And now if he were to say, hey, I want to use the original synthol, I might be like, bruh, it's not a very,
just out of health,
a very good idea. Yeah. But something like Synthrol, I would think, I just don't see Synthrol, that particular SEO, as, and someone may, you know, completely disagree with me and that's fine.
Yeah.
But I don't see that as this huge health concern. I think it's an oil that dissipates relatively quickly.
Okay.
And I have not personally seen the issue through, you know, renal function or liver function. And you have to understand, when you use those things, you're using them daily in pretty high volume injections. I mean, they're building to be pretty high volume injections. That's the whole point of it. And I haven't seen anything that is indicative of, oh shit, this is not a good idea.
I would be afraid of also abscess. That's my other thing. And I've seen, I know of one guy, well, I won't even bring him up, but what I was initially saying though was, yeah, I do think I would tell people not to do it. I mean, if you really wanted to, it's like, I'm not telling you shouldn't, but in general, for someone, like, my thought would be, the only time where, to me, I feel like it would make sense would be in competition, where let's take a guy who was really great and they're at a high level, and not even like me trying to win a state level show, you know, but like, we'll say you and I just spoke with Nate Spear, you know, on that show a couple of weeks ago. Say like Nate had a little bit of an issue with his lateral delts, maybe, you know, and we were like, hey, you know, this could be the difference of a pro card, you know, this could be the difference of winning that and becoming, you know, an IFBB pro. Then I could see in my mind, that's like where I would justify it, but I'm putting my own judgment onto it when I say that. You know what I mean? I'm not, you're letting people make their own decision, which I got to respect that, you know?
No, I'm sorry. I text Nate Spear real quick and told him that you thought his life was best. He just came back with, it's cool. He's just chill like that.
He deleted me too. I just looked at him.
I friended you off of Facebook.
Yeah, what the fuck, Nate?
I'm kind of with you on that, Scott. I mean, I think my thing would be, you know, people can do whatever they want. I don't care. But if looking at it kind of objectively, if someone needed an SEO to get a pro card, then I would think that in most cases, they're not going to go that far as a pro. But if you're a top 10 Olympian and you need that to go from a $10,000 paycheck to 100, I think that's a place where I would think, if someone said to me, hey, I got 950O and I'm a little lacking in this body part, and that's what they do for a living, that's how they make their living, then, you know, I would say, hey, man, I don't see any wrong in that for you. I mean, if you're, you know, but if a guy's like, man, I'm going to try to go pro or try to win nationals.
Even that, huh?
I think that's at that point, it's like, yeah, I mean, really, it's your body. You can do what you want. But if it was me, I couldn't put myself, I wouldn't do that probably, but you know, if it was my money and my living and I was close to the top and I need a little head, a little push, because a lot of guys are using it anyway. So, you know, I could see that. I could justify that.
All right. I'm going to move on, guys. I got the next question pulled up here. I got my questions organized today. I'm on the, I got the tablet here. We're, we're going to roll through them. Once again, guys, if you have any questions you want to ask on this show while we record this live, feel free to post them up, and we will take them here. Everybody who's watching, though, are the same people who already posted their questions. So anyway, this is from Kane. He says, what about adding Novadex to a cycle on top of an AI? Pros and cons? What would you not want to add it to? When would you not want to add it to a cycle? And if you would do something like this, what would be dosages that he could consider? What would be any kind of additional side effects he might not be thinking of?
I mean, so Novadex is not an aromatase inhibitor, as in Arimidex or Aromas is. So unless you're prone to gyno or issues that have to deal with estrogen in the breast tissue, I really don't see much use for Novadex in males. So if you can control your estrogen and you have no problems with your nips, I don't see much use in it, because it does lower IGF levels with prolonged use. So I don't really, not, they don't lower it a ton, but it does lower them some. I think it's one of those ones that was always kind of like, oh, you have to use Novadex, you have to use Novadex. And I think it's kind of fallen out of trend anyway, mm-hmm. to some degree. So, yeah. But it's not aromatase inhibitor. So if you're taking testosterone and you think you're going to take Novadex to lower your estrogen, it's not going to work. It just inhibits the receptor in your breast tissue from estrogen.
Here's the layman's term explanation of Novadex. Basically, you don't change the body, like Scott was saying. You don't change the level of estrogen in your body. You're just keeping it away from your titty tissue.
Yeah.
That's really the only thing you're doing. And, excuse me, I am really fighting being sick. The whole house is. I apologize.
Oh, that but sucks, anyway, man.
And it's funny that you say that about falling out of trend, because I feel the same way. I just look at it and go, you know what? Typically, if you're having gyno issues, instead of just covering your titty tissue, why don't you just lower your overall goddamn estrogen levels, because they're probably too fucking high. And you should know this because you should have blood work. And I say typically when you're dealing with gyno, your estrogen levels are too high. So get them under control, because it isn't just gyno that you should be concerned about with higher estrogen levels. I mean, it's been argued by a lot of people, by a lot of doctors, studies, everything else, that higher estrogen levels can feed cancer cells as well. So it probably not a great idea to have terribly high estrogen levels and just think that Novadex is going to cover it. Now, if you are prone and you just have this ridiculously high estrogen level and you fight to get it down, and I'll give you an example. Let's just say you're taking, you know, 600 milligrams of testosterone and, you know, 500 to 600, and you're having to take over a milligram a day of Arimidex to control your estrogen, and you still have it at 100.5, then yeah, you might want to throw some Novadex on top of a higher Arimidex dose to try to get it down, because it's going to, damn it, sorry. Because what's going to happen is you're going to come to a point where you're not going to want to take a ridiculously high amount of Arimidex, because it's going to absolutely destroy your HDL. So you're not going to be able to take it for very long or for any length of time, because you're just going to have your HDL probably be in single digits. So in a situation like that, you may want to try to combine Novadex with Arimidex, or I would say try to combine it with Aromasin. But if you're having ridiculously high levels of estrogen, Arimidex is probably going to be stronger and have more of an impact than Aromasin. But Novadex has shown to increase, just using Novadex, has been shown to increase your HDL as well. So there's that. But then you come back around to the other side of it, and I'm telling you, when I'm spending good money, if I was, on growth hormone or IGF, I wouldn't want to destroy those levels or even negatively impact them at all by using Novadex either. But you know what? I'll throw this out there. There is also a very well-known trainer who is, I have a lot of respect for, is very well established. His name is Knowledge Everything, and he believes in using Novadex. I don't think he either doesn't, and I'm guessing, but he either doesn't think that it has an impact on IGF levels, or it's relatively insignificant, or the amount that it impacts it is, he considers innocuous. So you're going to get different opinions on both sides. How much do you think Novadaq impacts IGF levels, Scott?
Oh, man, I don't know. I mean, way back when myself and other people used to check labs and compare them, I'd have to go back and look. It wasn't a ton. I mean, maybe 10%.
Right.
Maybe something like that.
It's not huge. At the same time, if you're fighting with good money to keep your IGF levels as high as possible, you kind of don't want to ruin it with a little Novadaq when you could use something else that would just keep your overall estrogen levels lower.
Now, in females, it's a different story.
Yeah.
Because estrogen is their primary sex hormone. They have more receptors it binds to. So there is a green light. That's one that's used quite often effectively. So that's a whole different ball game. But in males, I don't really find much use for it unless you got them really sensitive little breasties and you got to get it under control.
Yeah, I hadn't used Novadaq for a really long time personally. Like, you know, once I had really gotten into things, I think I never even had it around. Like, it just it wasn't something I had ever used for a long time. But yeah, females, we're talking, that's a whole other story, right? As you're saying, Scott. Yeah. I mean, that basically, I'd put that in the category of not just an ancillary, but like something to actually produce progress with, you know?
Yeah, I think it's very critical. A lot of females that are prepping, especially, it's a big difference maker. It's a very, you know, just not with males. I mean, Novadaq to guys is like that Halloween candy you get that sits in a little bowl and no one ever eats it, but you got the candy, you know? So that's how I look at it. And I don't think people are using it much anymore. I mean, I don't hear people even asking about it or really even, yeah, I think it's died on the vine some with male. Yeah.
You eat all the good candy in your pumpkin and there's nothing left except the shitty candy, you'll use it. You're like, fuck it, nothing else is left, I'll use this.
The candy corn.
But if I had more good candy, I would eat that and just leave the shitty candy in the bottom of the pumpkin.
My pumpkin.
All right. Let's see, going through the list here. What happened to the come up? That's a question somebody asked. That was a podcast we have here with Haley Delph and Ryan Delph. It should be coming back. They took a hiatus. I know Haley
should be coming up.
Yeah, should be coming up. Haley took a break, I think, from everything. She competed, did her pro debut in women's physique this year, and she looked fantastic. But you know, obviously pro debut, so she didn't kill it. You know, she looked fantastic though. And I know her and Ryan. somebody just said candy corn is underrated. But her and Ryan, I think that they're planning on doing a show. They're going to do a show like right at Christmas time, and then they both got like the worst flu ever. So I guess we should expect an episode of the come up pretty soon. This one I don't know about. This one looks like this is a tough one. And this is from Matt Marshall. We might have to go to Victoria with this one. I don't know. You guys might have something.
God, what are you saying?
She's the one who answers shit like this. So I don't know. But you guys may have some insight. What? Will you say that now? Well, I'll be, if you guys can answer it, then I was trying to give you an out basically here so that you guys can.
Hey, send it.
I want an apology. After I
yeah.
All right. This is from Matt Marshall. He says, what could cause someone to have low hemoglobin while hematocrit is in range? Also, what could cause chronic elevated platelets? As context, I give blood every 16 weeks. Those measures have been consistent for 2.5 years. And the diet is, he's a client of mine. His diet's super clean. And I'll let you guys take it from
AIDS, there. Cancer.
I want to make
the
sure.
Real answer?
I want to make sure I understand, though. Let me just go over it again real quick. I'm not gonna, but low hemoglobin.
Yep.
High hematocrit.
Hematocrit in range.
Hematocrit in range, but low. Did he say how low the hemoglobin? Just low normal, or are we talking real low?
I'm guessing it's low. When he says low, I'm gonna guess it's low as in below normal, but I don't know how low right now.
Could be anemic.
Thank you. I was going to go the same route. Yeah. It's almost obvious, isn't it?
There's a lot of things it could be. So don't worry. I don't mean you have AIDS or cancer, but, you know, I would say, has he had his D levels checked?
I could look. But that's something you would suggest he looked into?
He could be anemic. I mean, is he fatigued at all?
Not that he's complained of, no.
I'd go get a full total panel, not the I get the women's panel for cheap, for less money, you know, like most people do.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be a lot of things. I mean, it could be something. Plus, it's, you're saying low and high. I mean, it depends how high and low the two are. But anemia, it could be a lot of things. I mean, there's a lot of good, not so bad things it could be, and there's probably some bad things it could be. I would get a urologist and get some pretty extensive labs.
You could have a hemoglobin of even 9 or 10, and that would freak us out, but that's not technically anemic.
Yeah.
So the how high and how low, or in this particular case, if hematocrit is within range, then I understand that, but the range is still a fucking range. I mean, it's not terribly specific. But I would wonder what that hemoglobin really is. I mean, I think most people know that hemoglobin is basically the little car that drives the iron to where it has to go. It's about the easiest way to explain it. So you have to wonder, I mean, obviously if your hemoglobin is low, we're getting anemia from, or guessing, speculating, hypothesizing that there's anemia there, because obviously without substantial or adequate hemoglobin, then iron is going to be impacted. So that's where the anemia comes from. So there's a lot there. I'll be honest. I mean, you're probably right. This is, unfortunately, more of a question to be answered by Victoria or even my doctor client in Canada who specializes in blood pathology and specifically in hemoglobin. She would probably know that as well.
He said hemoglobin is 10 to 12. Range is 13 at the low end, 13 to 18. So it's not that far off.
Right. But as a bodybuilder, I can understand why he's freaking out, because if I saw that level,
yeah,
I would be like, holy fucking shit.
At least wonder, you know?
Yeah, something's not right.
Well, his platelet numbers are high and his hemoglobin's low. So, I mean, anemia is probably the most likely thing because the platelets aren't being transported. So they're raising in levels, but because they're in the blood still. At high levels, so I would say it's probably anemia, but I mean, you go get it checked out, get his iron levels checked, all that, and go from there.
I've been talking to
so we don't need Victoria, okay?
Yeah, we kind of do.
She would have made it sound smarter, but
yeah, right.
She gave me some good insight into a guy this past week who he's vegan and he uses gear, and he showed signs of anemia, and so he went and got tested, and he was pretty severely anemic. I mean, he's, yeah, you know, eating a ton of food, but it's, you know, I think he was getting like, I think he said like 300 grams of protein. No, it was less. I think it was like 270 grams of protein, but it's not all complete sources, you know?
Right.
It throws me, man. I couldn't imagine it. It's like, you know, you were saying, Skip, about like people making their own personal choices. You know, if somebody wants to run SEO, you know, I guess the same thing could be said about, you know, what you eat. You know, if you, somebody wants to be vegan, you know,
we have a parent, there's crazy people in Florida, but you know, we had a couple who was charged, criminally charged, because they had their young kid on a vegan diet and the kid died.
Holy shit.
And we're talking young kid, only, you know, 3 years old or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's where it's disappointing, because, you know, I'm not going to sit here and I'm not going to slam the vegan thing. I mean,
no,
the truth really is they didn't, you know, this particular, these two, this couple, these parents, you know, the path to hell is paved with good intentions. They probably really did believe that it was healthy and it was the best move for their kid, because they probably were vegans themselves. I mean,
yeah,
you're not going to have meat eaters feeding their kids, you know, grains, going, you know, we want you to be healthy and, You know, the only people who do that are people who feed their dogs better than themselves, but that's a completely or cats for that matter.
Vegans are pretty broad. So, I mean, maybe they're feeding the kid lettuce only.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. But that's where you get into, you know, that type of story would be trashed on the internet because how fucking stupid they are. Vegan this and you got to eat meat. You got to be a fucking man.
Yeah.
There are still, you know, it's funny because the whole veganism thing is such a mess right now because of this fucking documentary.
Oh, but yeah.
There are still valid, there are still components that are plant-based that are still solid. The truth is whether we like it or not, animal meat isn't going to be sustainable forever. We're proving that as well. So these changes will have to be made over time. Not that everybody has to be a vegan, but the point is we're going to end up eating more plant-based shit. So we'll have to put a show together for that exclusively because we could talk forever about that.
I saw Dante.
There's always people to eat.
Remember well, I don't think you're going to be surprised that hemoglobin levels are low in a vegan.
Yeah.
I mean, fuck, of course. They're probably going to be low. There isn't any fucking meat in there.
I saw, you know, Dante a while ago had been producing a cricket protein. And I've seen all sorts of information. They're saying because you can farm crickets and raise them and then basically grind them up and turn them into a protein shake. And it's going to be cheap, like the cost to grow those crickets versus like a pound of that protein versus a pound of beef protein was so much lower, as you could imagine.
Well, I imagine you're not going to have the waste, but you're not going to have, you know, the amount of food that a cow consumes. That's the sustainable part. And yeah. I don't want anybody getting shitty with me about, you know, writing nasty shit. I'll tell you right now, fuck yourself, because I'm not sitting here saying I have a problem with meat. I'm not saying be a vegan. I'm not a fucking vegan. I love meat. I love steak. I love burgers. I love chicken, fish, pussy. Sometimes when I'm not alone, maybe if I could reach my own dick, I might eat my own dick. I don't even know. I'm trying to satisfy everybody here so that no one comes back and fucks with me over this vegan shit.
Skip has had enough people fuck with him at Elite FTS. He doesn't need more here.
You should write an article at Elite FTS about eating your dick.
Yeah, I'm sure David.
I might even read it.
Anyway, the point being is I'm not on this fucking vegan bandwagon. All I'm saying is over time, it will not be sustainable. It's not sustainable because the cows have to eat so much more fucking food and it won't feed everybody. So
no.
Just like you're saying with the crickets and everything else, there are going to be these things, whether we like it or not, that will end up kind of evolving with the nutrition and with protein, and like it or not, it almost has to happen.
Okay, Tanya Miller says, yeah, there's a brand that makes cricket protein bars. It's called ExoBar or something like that. Apparently it tastes like a regular bar. I can tell you right now, it does not taste like a regular bar because I ate one. And when I say I ate one, I took two bites.
Did you know what it was before you ate it?
I did, but I was being totally open-minded.
No, you weren't. You were clearly...
No. Believe me. Biased. Oh, my
You're
God.
You're eating like this, like there's fucking crickets.
We did it on Bodybuilding Nerds Radio for a review, and it was chocolate-flavored, and it smelled kind of like chocolate, but, dude, it smelled like fucking crickets, too. Like, you ever go to it smelled like the pet store, like back where they feed the lizards and stuff, and they have that big tub of crickets. It kind of smelled like that. It kind of smelled like some sort of weird shit. It did not smell good. And I took a bite, and I was like, oh, my God, this is terrible, and I ate it. And then I was like, well, maybe I should take another bite just to make sure. And
you know what? Look at the bright side, because this is important.
Yeah.
Okay? You admitted to eating crickets, and I just admitted to trying to eat my own dick. So, I guess you're probably in better shape than I am at this point.
Whew. All right. I'll move on then. Well, while we're behind, we've got one more here. Let's see. We're running low on time, but guys, if you have any other questions for the show, you're welcome to throw them on. If not, it's because everybody already put them in the thread. Let's see. We talked a little bit about this on another show on drugs and stuff. I want to get your perspectives, though. Everybody has their own opinion on microdosing of test daily rather than one-shot deals weekly. What do you think, Scott?
For the 75th time, answer this question, Scott. I know it sounds shitty. I don't mean it that way.
For anybody who's new to the show.
If I know. If I take 500 milligrams on a Monday, let's just say, once a week, compared to stretching that out over 7 days, I mean, obviously your blood levels are going to be more stable. You won't aromatize as much. I mean, it keeps you out of the roller coaster of the up I go, because your testosterone levels are going to max out somewhere in about that 18 hour window after you inject. So obviously, if you take it all at once, you're going to have a bigger spike, but then it tapers off kind of slow as it comes down over a week. But if you take it every day, the same amount, break it down, I mean, obviously you're going to keep more stable blood levels. But I've done both. I mean, I don't know, whatever. If you don't mind injecting, either way.
Did I read into it, though? And he didn't say sub-Q, did he?
No. He just said.
Okay, then that's on me. And I want to apologize to the person who asked the question. I naturally assumed that it was the sub-Q daily, and that's my fault. So I apologize.
No, he just said microdosing. So it could be IM. Okay. I've seen people that microdose with an insulin syringe because it's like it's a lot less commitment to just pop in whatever it is, 0.2.
That's what I would do.
And a lot less scar tissue over time. I mean, if you're going to inject drugs for 30 years, I don't know, someone like myself, you're going to deal with a ton of scar tissue if you're using bigger IM needles and that sort of shit, to the point where you might not even be able to plunge the plunger and feel like just a complete loser that has done drugs for too many years. It's kind of a slap in the face. You're like, you get mad at the syringe for not plunging, but it's really your own fault because you've used drugs for so many years that you've run out of fresh places to put the fucking drugs.
Yeah. Okay. Snap, right. Crackle, pop. That happens before.
Good morning.
Yeah, that happens before you reach the stage that you're speaking of. Moments before. Like, yeah.
I'm trying to inject a very fatty ribeye.
I think Skip needs some counseling or something.
Or it's instead of when you find
send to counseling.
That's what this show's for, Scott.
Or you put them in your lats and you've never injected lats and it's like butter.
Yeah. I'm going to do this all the time.
Yeah, melted butter.
He didn't hear anything that we said. He just kept going. He's like, blah, 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 in my lats. Blah, blah, blah. I go,
what? Skip, what do you think, though, of this method?
I don't want to know what he said.
Oh, you really didn't hear him?
No, I legit did not hear him. It's probably a good thing. Fuck you,
Yeah,
Scott.
You're better off. That was a good response, actually. That was.
No, it wasn't. No. Oh, mine was.
Yeah, that was a good response. You actually nailed it. Yeah.
Anyway.
You're all right, Skip. How are your wife and my kids? They're doing all right?
Anyway. Now I'm distracted.
He's trying to think, do they really look like him?
The microdose thing. Pretty much, I hate to agree with Dickhead over there, but it is a blood level issue. So, yeah, I get to say, people ask me a lot about this with Prop. Well, you know, can I, and I'm, this is a good way to kind of spin this or answer it a different way. People ask me about Prop, like, how many times do I need to inject it or whatever? You know what? I've had, if you're running just Prop and just Sip, and you inject it 84 hours apart, basically a Monday morning and a Thursday night, you're going to keep blood levels pretty constant. If you're just doing Prop and you inject it every 84 hours, you're probably going to have a little bit more of a roller coaster. Yes, it will keep your blood levels more stable if you inject it every day, but it's really not necessary. And if you have a little bit of this, it's not going to matter. If you have this, then it matters. So injecting every other day did he say what kind of test it was?
He just said test. I think I kind of like thought maybe he was thinking of like even a replacement dose, but that I just inferred that. I have no idea. You know, he just said test though.
He didn't say TRT or anything else.
No,
right?
No.
So let's just look at it. Yeah, exactly. Let's just say it's 1,000 milligrams. I mean, basically, it depends on the ester, because if it's a longer ester, you're going to have less of that. You're going to have better stability than if it's a shorter ester. And no one's going to be injecting 750 or 1,000 milligrams of Prop. But the point being, you're going to have more fluctuation with the shorter ester. You combine a short with a long, you're still going to have less fluctuation and more stability. So yes, ideally you're going to have more of a level, stable level, blood level is what I'm looking for. Sorry. Doing it daily, but it's just not needed. The fluctuation isn't going to be enough if you inject it every other day or even every third day to really matter. And really what you have to watch, and correct me if you think that this is wrong, Scott, but I think really what you're worried about with fluctuation really isn't the test level going up and down. It's the changes in the estrogen levels, basically the kickback. Do you agree with that, Scott?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're going to stick a 500 milligrams at one time, you're going to have more aromatase at one time. So
right, but with the fluctuating test levels, you're going to have more of a fluctuating level with estrogen too. The more stable the test level, the more stable the estrogen kickback.
Depending on what the ester of the test is, but yeah, right. Every day I've done it before. I mean, just half of a little insulin syringe, was it 50 cc's or whatever, and just every other day, and then I forget, so I couldn't ever keep up with it. But I think you can. I'd say that the way to go with everyday microdosing is you can get away with the benefit to it is you can get away with insulin syringes. You can get away with those little half inchers, so you're not jabbing yourself, and especially if you got a lot of scar tissue, if you have to move the injection sites around a lot and find places that probably aren't so comfortable to a 1-inch, 1.5-inch pin of, a 25 gauge, then the insulin syringe makes it easy, a little more comforting. But I don't know. Just stick the stuff in there and go. Yeah, it all works.
And here, let me just throw this last in and we can move on. I don't mean to drag the subject out.
No, it's all right.
I would say this. I don't see any reason to inject a long estered test, like a cypionate and an anthate, 3 times a week or more. That's my personal opinion, because I don't think the fluctuations in the blood levels at that point matters. I would say 2, no problem. 3, just no more than 3. It's a fucking waste. It's a waste of time. I understand what you're saying with the insulin pin and everything else. But the truth is you can get an insulin pin IM on a long ester, like a cypionate, and you can inject easily with an insulin pin. It's a little bit harder to plunge because of it being an insulin pin and that sort of, I get that, but you're still not going to have any problem putting a mil in. And a mil is fucking, I mean, if you do it 3 times a week and it's a mil, it's 250 milligrams. You could get 750 milligrams in an insulin pin 3 times a week. You just don't need to do it anymore. To me, it would be a waste of time. That's just my opinion.
Okay. We had a follow up here. I'm going to throw up. This is going to be kind of a different topic because I think he was talking about TRT, because he said one weekly shot versus microdosed every day. So it does lead me to think that he was talking about TRT. But Anne Marie chimes in and she says, does the idea of injecting every day or every other day apply to females as well in terms of blood levels, stability, and how it affects hormone levels overall?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. You're introducing an exogenous compound, so if you introduce a small amount every day I'd say it's anything. Let's say you take an Arimidex Monday and Friday. Is that going to be the same as breaking those two pills down into little chunks and taking them every day? No, because everything has a half-life, and a life. So, distance between is going to affect levels of anything you take.
Okay, but don't you think, though, too, like as an example, I presume that because she's a female, that her testosterone dosing would be significantly less than what the male is doing. When you have a smaller dose, if you were to microdose a smaller dose, you're probably going to have, with the smaller dose, it's going to be more impactful to do it every day because that's a smaller dose and there won't be as much of a surge. Do you get what I'm saying? I would think with the smaller dose, I would want to do it more frequently than a larger dose.
Yeah, I mean, but in general, it's going to be, yeah, you could do that. I mean, but in general, it's going to be every drug has a half-life and a life. So right. The farther you space them apart, the more the mountain goes up and down of your levels.
Right, exactly.
I've heard, I think the one thing is side effects, right? The higher the surge, the higher the risk of side effects. You know, the bigger the fluctuation, the higher the ups and downs. I noticed it myself back in the day when I had used Tren that I'd get more side effects, including acne was a big one for me, even on every other day. And when I moved that the same dose per week to every day, that worked better for me. But we're talking about, you know, something real specific. So I have heard of females, because she's talking about, she mentioned she added test probe or test sip for females. I have heard females microdosing to try to avoid side effects. So I feel like that would make sense.
Yeah, because it's more stable blood levels. You're just you're accomplishing the same thing. You're looking to have more stable blood levels. I don't think it matters so much that it's a male or female. It's what you're how you're applying the exogenous compound and what sequence timing and everything. So
and acne, I think it's important to note that the large majority of people get acne and break out when blood levels are climbing or blood levels are falling off at the beginning or the end of a cycle. It's not typical for people to have or get acne like in the middle of a cycle from stable blood levels. So if you know, like you were talking about, if you're going to have those odd fluctuations, it probably could contribute to acne in the middle of a cycle, which should not happen.
I think I metabolized it quickly or something, you know.
You know, acne, a lot of people are affected by the acne part if they take large doses at once, because you know you have a high increase of estrogen, but you can also get acne from having really low estrogen.
Right.
Yeah.
So, because you know, and you know, there's a lot of debates about acne, but people that are prone to it generally is because their pores in their skin are narrower, and you know, it doesn't always have to do with you know, an exogenous compound. Most people that get acne are just going to get it worse if they use steroids or anabolic steroids, because it affects those levels, and usually it comes down to the kind of skin you have and skin issues.
See,
I don't get acne because I'm smooth.
I think it's more hormone related than Scott does, I think.
Yeah.
I do. But, and I think that's the, again, it's fluctuating though. It's, you know, and you'll see it in teenagers too. I mean, you can have great skin, but if you all of a sudden you have those hormones that are all over the fucking place, then you have kids who are breaking out. I mean, it's just, you know, I think that the hormones play a big part. I think there are other factors, like you said. It may have to do with size of the pore. It may have to do with, genetic predisposition to have a more oily skin than not. There's a lot that can factor, but I think the hormones are at the root of it.
Well, there's the reason why most people get acne on their face is because your face is exposed. You know, and so that
exposed to sun, what?
The elements. So it becomes less porous.
Still, though, you know, it's like saying if that were the case, then, you know, I think of one of my, you know, any of my kids or myself, my face was always exposed, but so were the back of my hands. I never broke out on the back of my hands when I was a teenager, and neither of any of my kids.
The sun doesn't like you.
No, but I don't think that the breaking out has anything to do with the sun either. Now I'm just being argumentative, I guess. But
go live on the beach and you won't get acne.
It's hormonal based before anything.
Go live on the beach.
Sun does not.
Move to the beach in a tent and you'll get acne.
If sun actually salt kept water. People from salt breaking water. Out, then people who had a tan wouldn't break out.
Salt water.
Come on. Well, I mean, there's other things that can do it, but acne has also been shown where it's not as much topical as it is that it comes from underneath the skin, because the body creates more oil or cecum. God, I love that word.
Sebum.
Yeah.
Sebum. Sebum from the sebaceous gland.
And this comes from the guy who puts his dick in his mouth. Oh, God.
Anyway, you get what I'm saying. It's not, I don't know that exposure, I mean, sun exposure would probably keep the surface of the skin drier and less oily, so you'd have less blackheads and stuff like that. I mean, when I was a teenager, I didn't have bad acne. I had very oily skin, and I would get blackheads. So I had to constantly clean the surface of my skin, and I would be fine. But I didn't get acne, and acne, I don't think, comes from the surface. I think it comes from the inside and the lower But hey, there may be skin experts out there, you know, who sell like essential oils and stuff, who could tell me that I'm incorrect. So,
well, my Amway pyramid scheme says that your skin causes it.
Are people still doing Amway? Is that a thing still?
I have no idea.
Amway was actually based in, you know that, in Michigan, Grand Rapids, Michigan.
I didn't realize that. I knew there were a lot of people selling it around here, but I just assumed it was because it was popular. Huh.
No, it was its base, their headquarters right there. And that's Van Andel, isn't it? Van Andel's the relation to Amway, I'm pretty sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I have to check on that because I don't want to give incorrect information to the masses. Yeah. You know, the tens of thousands of people.
You do it all the time, so don't worry.
Tens of thousands of people that are listening to the podcast, I don't want to misinform them.
Skips Amway advice.
Mass misinformation.
Well, we're about out of time, but before we left, I wanted to ask you, Skip, about your personal training. Because this is something we talked a little bit about it before the show.
Why would you laugh, dickhead? What is so? Well,
I can see you probably told the guy, "Hey, we're gonna have a 1 hour session." So, and it lasted 4 and 3 hours of you talking about yourself.
I don't even know.
1 hour working out.
I answered the questions he was asking me.
Okay.
Yeah, you probably go. I can hear this is an entry statement when the guy asks anything.
Oh, you're talking about
people ask me all the time. I get questions all the time about that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you went from there.
Right.
Did you look at his glutes,
Skip? You know what? Now you're just getting on my nerves. So you just sit over there and spit that brown foul juice that's in your mouth into your spitter.
Here's my thought, man. This is what I've been thinking. I feel like everybody now is a nutrition coach. Everybody's a diet coach. That's like what everybody wants to become. And I feel like I don't know anybody who's like, I'm going to become a personal trainer. It's not happening anymore.
Skip.
No, that personal trainer phase was like, what, 12, 15 years ago where everybody was a personal trainer. I do recall that.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. And now everybody wants to be a coach. Like they, you know, they think like that's the thing that people want to get into now. But I feel like there's an open freaking market on personal training. I really do.
Well, I mean, I'm not going into it thinking, oh, my God, this is going to be incredibly lucrative. Obviously, it's another revenue stream.
Sure.
But like I said, I wouldn't do it if I wasn't getting paid. So there's that. I'm just being honest.
Right.
But the point is I'm just trying to get out of the fucking house.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's the thing. A lot of people think, oh, this online thing, everybody wants to be an online trainer. What they don't understand is if you're actually successful and you can make a living doing it and then do it for fucking 15 years, it's going to drive you nuts. That's why I laugh at some of these cats who think it's so funny. I'm going to pick on Austin.
I knew you were going to say Austin.
Because he's a good dude. And same with Jeff, the Sue, Jeffrey Sue.
Jeffrey Sue. Yeah.
And, you know, they're loving it because they're new to it. I totally get that. And I still love what I do.
Yeah.
But they haven't. Austin is going to have problems because he trains at home in that barn.
Yeah.
And he lives there and he doesn't live close to anything.
Yeah.
And he's still in the kind of the honeymoon phase. This is cool shit. Yeah. I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have to deal with people. Dude, it will fucking drive you to insanity.
Yeah.
You just haven't done it long enough. Like it's going to drive you insane. Your cats, you know, he's a cat dude.
Yeah.
I totally fucking love that. He'll be talking to his cats like I do. And
you're going to become Skip, Austin.
He'll be like, I got to fucking talk to somebody. Like I got to talk to somebody.
Austin, you're looking at your future.
Austin, you're going to end up like Skip one day. So let's take a deep breath here. Maybe go back to college.
At least he trains at home.
Yeah.
I get out of the house to go train and I'm still going nuts.
Yeah.
The other thing is he probably gets along with his wife really well.
Yeah.
Wait till he's not. And she's driving him fucking nuts. Mm. He can't go anywhere.
Don't say that. Because I was just going to tell you, so I can relate, first of all. And I've had my phases. You know, I've had my phases where when I went full time 5 years ago, that I went from seeing people all the time to not seeing anybody. And then I'd get out of the house and I'd go to the grocery store and I'd be like, people, you know?
I'll talk to the cash register.
Yeah, yeah, anybody. Because you just, it's, you know what the other thing is you and I are, we are people. We communicate, we talk, you know? There are people out there. Probably like S2H. You could probably put S2H in like a cabin in the woods for a month And he'd just like do his thing and it wouldn't be a problem.
He wants to save two words. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't like people all the time. I mean, I'm old and jaded. There's a part of me that doesn't want to deal with people too. So I can understand the like lack of like, you know, I don't always want to bring. It's just that over time it does drive me nuts. Like I just want that interaction and I want to, you know, joke, or I want to make, you know, somebody laugh or be witty or, yeah, you know, be nice to somebody. And it, fuck, man.
You know what I do? You know what I do? Here's my trick. And I like I've talked to people about this. Like I talked to Shelby about this, Shelby Starnes. You know, he's been a full-time coach for a decade, something like that. I mean, he's a very scheduled, regimented person too. He's like, well, I walk my dog at this time.
Or my, you know, flies his little airplanes. He flies little airplanes.
What does he do? What, flies airplanes?
Flies airplanes.
I've never seen him fly airplanes. I've never seen him fly an airplane.
And walks his dog and plays the piano.
He doesn't play the piano. That's someone else. I think you're thinking of Dave Pulcinella. Yeah.
I think he plays the piano.
Okay, well, until you're sure, just sit there and be quiet.
Hey, shut the fuck up. We're talking.
God damn.
But here's my secret. I podcast almost every day. I hang out with you guys, and I talk every day. But that said, Victoria spends like weeks, months at a time here now, and she works from home researching. So we have like we both do the same thing basically. We both work from home. We can both take breaks when we want to train and stuff. So it works out good. And then you said, wait till you start fighting. I hope we never get to that stage.
Well, you play video games, Scott, because I get texts all the time. Hey, which gun should I pick for the commando raid?
I'll tell you what. I've got this game downloaded on my tablet, so it's like not a video, like a real computer game. It's like basically like one you use on your phone, and it's a first person shooter. This is a whole other thing. We're getting way off topic here, but I've gotten really good at it. I play like rounds last 10 minutes. And so I've played it off and on for the last 3 years now. And somebody actually asked me, they were like, hey, could I hire you to train me on the game to get better at it? And my head started turning because I was like, you know what? You could make a podcast about this. And I just was like, I could stop doing nutrition coaching and start training people on the game. No, I'm kidding.
Exactly. Gamer training or gamer consulting.
That's the biggest YouTube channel.
All their money from the sponsors. They get good at those, and then they have their little picture in the corner, and people play the game, and they follow those guys to see how they play.
Yeah.
Or they talk their way through the course of fire or whatever it is.
Yeah. The biggest YouTube channel is a gamer's channel. That's the biggest YouTube channel of
millions.
All times.
They make millions doing that.
Yeah, right over Life Coach and go straight to gamer because the next – progression after online nutrition is clearly life coaching.
Yeah.
Because I mean, we've all got our shit together.
Somebody said that recently.
Yeah. Relationships, finances. I mean, I don't know a bodybuilder that doesn't have a 780, 800 credit score. Yeah. We all do. Right. I mean, right. Retirement plan, everything. I mean, let's do that next show. We need to have a topic on life coaches so I can absolutely fucking destroy them.
Okay,
life coaches. There's your topic. There's your segment. We don't have to do it.
People ask him that all the time.
We don't even have to do it now, actually, the more I think about it. Because I just laid my opinion out there.
But I'm thinking about personal training. Back to that. This is like kind of like our little wrap-up, non-topic topic. I'm thinking about it, man. It would be fun. I feel like the longer that I've trained, the more – like I haven't used any gear for 2 years now. And – the only thing that I've changed, I haven't even eaten like I used to. Like I used to really eat to bulk, you know. If I wasn't cutting for a show, then I wasn't cutting, and I was just trying to add food and trying to grow. The last couple of years, man, last 2 years, I've been more laid back with my food, and I've been, you know, focusing on a lot of other things. Yet at the same time, my back has improved, and the only thing that I've changed is my training. I've had muscle parts improve. My hamstrings have improved. My glutes have improved. The only thing I've changed is my training. I really see how important it is, man. So I feel like I have more of a passion for training more than I ever have now. It would be fun. It'd be fun to get in the gym. I guess the key would be finding clients that were like on that wavelength. You're not just training like, you know, That's what exactly. I would want to do. I wouldn't want to be training like somebody who's like, I don't want to be here right now, you know?
But you can go either way. You can go with the people who have a lot of money who don't care, yeah. or you can go with your competitor type that is on your wavelength. And I'm still trying to figure that out. I'll be honest, because I would probably rather have the competitors, but that upper, I don't
know. People who can afford to, the people who can afford training.
Exactly. You know? I mean, just, you know, you got your rich clientele too, who, and they'll stay with you. Personal training, if you have a good rapport with them,
yeah,
they'll stay with you. And it's just, you know, you just keep cashing checks, you keep training them, and they're happy and you're happy. So you just have to figure out what you want to do. I'm in a good spot now because I am very, very close to a gym and haven't been for years. Remember, I lived up the, you know, I lived in Evergreen, I lived in Blackhawk. I was nowhere near a gym.
Yeah.
And had I lived, you know, 4 minutes from Armbrust, maybe I would have wanted to train people. Now I live 4 minutes from Titan Gym, and I like the gym. I like the clientele. There's competitors there, and I can do it now. So it's good
timing. That's cool, man.
Like I said, gets me out of the house. And, you know, this cat I met tonight, hopefully he's, you know, he's going to be on board. I left it up to him. I'm not putting anybody on the spot. I told him to walk away from the table, think about it, and if he's on board, I'm in. And we'll see, and if he is, it'll be a good fit. So hopefully that's my first client, you know, here, face to face. Cause that's when you go to get clients getting in, for anybody who wants to get into personal training, independent personal training, where you're not just at 24 hour and they feed you, you know, clients where you make, you know, $17 an hour, but you actually have 10. To build your business. It's the first client that really is the hardest one to get. Once you do that, you're in the gym and you're training and you're seen by other people,
yeah.
and you'll be approached and they know who you are. I train late at night. Nobody knows who I am. It was funny because the owner said, I'll come in and train when everybody's here. No, because no one wants to see me train like, and I'll look like a freak to them. First, I have a stocking cap on with cats on it.
So you don't wear that when you go in there? You're not going to wear that when you personal train people?
Not when I train people, but I still will train late at night wearing the fucked up shit I always wear. That's not going to change.
Skip, are you dipping?
No.
Liar.
But I will say this. I did put one in because this is my last day to chew.
Is it really?
Where?
Yeah. I got back from Michigan yesterday, and my wife has made a commitment that I have, and so has my daughter,
yeah.
and I have to make mine. So, and I want to. I can't continue to chew the way I'm chewing because I chew way too much and I'm getting too old. It's gonna catch up with me. So
I like that idea then, man. We want to keep you around.
Yeah,
not quitting.
I know you're not, but I'm gonna quit. You're gonna die and I'm not going to. So there's that.
Gotta die sometime.
Gotta die.
I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
All right. On that note, guys, let's get out of here for another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear with S2H and Skip Hill. You guys could go to teamskip.com. Check out Skip's nutrition programming and find him over at Titan Gym. Hire him as a personal trainer. And
Don't do it.
Of course, guys, go to truenutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES for some great savings and some awesome supplements. We'll see you next time.